Support for the Source Podcast comes from UT Health San Antonio, South Texas' largest academic research institution, where what is discovered in its labs translates into life-changing patient care. More at groundbreakingresearch.org. This program is recorded from an earlier live broadcast.
Live from the John L. Santico Studio in downtown San Antonio, this is The Source from Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. The race for South Bexar County House District 118 is seen as one of the few competitive districts in Texas this election season. The district had been a reliable win for Democrats, but that changed in 2021 with a special election that was won by Republican John Lujan, and he won it again in the mid-district 2022. Christian Carranza won the Democratic nomination in March to challenge Lujan. We're going to hear from both candidates today, and you get to ask the questions. In the first hour of The Source, we're joined by Representative Lujan. In the second half, Christian Carranza joins us, and you can call in at 833-877-8255 at 833-TPR-SOURCE. And reminders here, the last day to register to vote is October 7th. Early voting begins on Monday, October 21st, and Election Day is November the 5th. And Representative John Lujan, welcome back to The Source.
Hey, Dave, thank you. Thanks for having me here.
So we've done this before, but if you could kind of remind us, like, who are you? You know, you're a great storyteller. I got to tell you that. So tell us, the listeners who aren't familiar with you, who you are.
Well, my name is John Lujan. I'm a state rep for House District 118 here, which encompasses pretty much all of South Bexar County, East Bexar County, all the way up through Selma, Universal City.
Yeah, it kind of wraps around. Grabs up shirts and so on.
Yeah, and so I was elected. Last session was my first session there. I'm a retired San Antonio firefighter. Prior to that, I was with the sheriff's office. And I retired because when I was a fireman, I started a small company. 10 years ago, we had about 200 employees. My partner said, hey, you said that you would retire if we got to this point. So I did. And we've just had a lot of success in that. And that's what propelled me to run. Seeing the projects that we were doing, economic development and then juvenile, you know, providing opportunities for young people, that's big on my plate. And so I decided to run. But you said a key thing. It had never been a Republican district. So I really didn't think I could win. I said, I'm going to throw my name in the hat and let's see what happens. And I won. I won the primary. I won in 2016. I didn't win the general. And then I won again, I didn't want to be a footnote in history, right? The only guy that can't win a general, but I ended up winning that one, and then I won the general election. And so things are going well. I love it. I love working and collaborating and bringing people together, and we have so many. I'm not bragging, but I've got to be one of the busiest state reps in all of Texas with all the projects that we're working on.
Right. Well, the nitpickers might say because of the 2020 redistricting that they did make it a district that would be more accommodating to a Republican like yourself who could win in that district.
Yeah, there's no doubt. It made it easier. It's still a Democrat district. I did win twice when it was the old district, but I didn't win the general, right, in the old one. But on the new one, it's 52% Democrat, 48% Republican. And, to be honest, I get a lot of criticism. Hey, why don't you put, your Republican on when I post and things that I'm doing? Man, I'm really not on the party stuff. I'm really big about doing what's right for our district. And so many people would just want to get that, the D and the R. And until we stop that, even at the Texas House, I have, somebody brings a bill, who brought it to the table? If it's an R, I don't want to see it. Or if it's a D, I don't want to see it. They base it by that instead of looking at the policy. And that's what I kind of bring to the table. I do get criticism by a lot of on the far right stuff because I do work a lot with the D's, but they're good policies that if I sat down with them, they would agree. And so that's kind of the way I govern.
Well, we'll get into some of that a little bit later on. I have looked at what you have voted for. But first, let's kind of go over some of the broad issues. And people also look at the district and then say, looking at the precincts and calculating all that, this is a district that Biden would have won by about 2 or 3%. So, this is a district. That's why they think this is a district that could go either way, but everyone seems to know you. I mean, you've been in a district, for your whole life.
My whole life.
You've been involved in, sports and stuff.
I've coached 30 years, football, and ran leagues all through the South Side. Even the fire stations I worked at were all on the South Side in my district. So I'm well known to the district. You know, but you brought up a good point. Governor Abbott was here for a fundraiser, and he brought up a point that I didn't even know. He was sharing the statistics that he, Trump, all the Republicans lost the 118 when I was the only one to win the 118. And they were saying, how did he do that? But I think a lot of it is just my reputation and my family's reputation in the area. So I think, and people just know us.
So, and you're John Lujan IV, is that right?
I'm actually John Lujan III. My dad is junior, my granddad's senior, and I have a fourth. That's my oldest son.
Oh, okay. All right. So I just wanted to make clear. Don't get them confused. Okay. Yeah. So let me ask you about the issue that everyone is kind of keyed into right now, and that is school vouchers and public school funding. Can you talk about where you are on that?
So I'm for educational savings accounts. So, and I know that's a very touchy one. I'm a product of the public schools. I have five boys, and they went, my two older boys, public school all the way through. So that's all I know is public school. I want to fully fund public school, 100%. However, I'll give you a real-world example. I have two boys that are adopted. I have three adopted boys, but I have two boys that are brothers. And we were their CASA parents, and they were getting, I'm taking a long story short, they were going to get adopted. They were there at that family for 1 month, a second cousin out of Houston. She came back and said, I can't take the boys. They're 14 and 12. We're going to get it. She was a young woman they had a two-year-old son. And she said, my husband and I are going to get a divorce to save our family. These boys have been in foster care all their life. They're just not, we just can't do it. They were our CASA kids for a year. So when we found that out and we figured, then CPS said they were going to be separated. I said, we need to keep them together. So my wife and I prayed about it. We adopted them. We didn't plan on it, but we adopted them. They were 14 and 12 at the time. In that time, my boys had already graduated high school. The school system was under TEA. TEA took it over, failing school. And I have two boys. I'm not even dad yet. My wife's not mom yet. And I'm going to put them into this school. There was just no way we could do that. We went to another school. And, man, I had that opportunity to do that because we had the wherewithal to do it. And we took them to another school.
And they were a charter school.
A charter school. And they were there for 2 years. But that charter school was totally different. They were uniforms and this. After 2 years, the younger one says, Dad, I want to play football. I want to, with the high school, the local high school. And so we brought them back. But now I was dad, my mom, my wife was mom, and we were a family unit. And so we could deal with that. And both boys are in college. One's graduating. He's 24 now, and he's graduating from Texas A&M San Antonio, cybersecurity. And the younger one, Christopher, he's 22. He's a sophomore at UTSA cybersecurity. And so very successful, but I don't know if I would have had that, that choice, those opportunities. So I think I'm just real big on parental rights, having that choice to do those things.
Right, but you did have that choice. And so right now we hear a lot from Governor Abbott. I got to hit this break. We're going to talk more about this, come on the other side of the break, about school choice. We have school choice. You had school choice. Vouchers or school savings accounts, whatever you want to call it, it's not school choice. That's just more choice, I guess you might want to call it. But it is going to have an impact on school funding the way things are drafted right now. And they are having an impact on school funding right now. And we'll talk about that too. But the number to call in is 833-877-8255, 833-TPR-TALK. We have Representative John Lujan in the studio. He is running for re-election for Texas House District 118. In the second half, we're going to be joined by his Democratic opponent, Christian Carranza. And this is The Source on Texas Public Radio. We'll be right back.
Support for TPR comes from Jingu House in the Japanese Tea Garden, featuring Asian cuisine with a San Antonio twist. Open for lunch 7 days a week. View the menu at jinguhousesatx.com.
And this is The Source on Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. We're having a series of programs where you get to talk to the candidates and ask them the questions that are on your mind, and you can call in. We have Representative John Lujan, the Republican. He represents Texas House District 118. If you visualize a map of Bexar County, it pretty much covers all of South Bexar County and southwest and southeast, and then it wraps around, has an arm that runs around and grabs a hold of Schertz and those areas. So Anselma, there's a lot of area. Some of it is, it's a mix of rural and developed. And he's here to take your questions. Give him a call. In the next half hour, we're joined by his Democratic opponent, Christian Carranza. So we were talking about school funding, you know, when we went to the break. And you were talking about your experience, personal experience with voucher schools, about charter schools and how that worked out for you and your adopted sons. But, you know, the issue now with vouchers, the school savings accounts that Governor Greg Abbott is pushing, is the question is whether or not that will drain resources from the public school system overall. Public school systems right now are, as you probably well know, they are running on deficits because Governor Abbott did not add new funding to the schools during the last session because vouchers were not passed. It's been interpreted by the media as he was holding that money hostage because vouchers did not pass. So the question is, why support vouchers if it's going to take money away from the traditional public school system?
So, you know, just like I said on those adopted boys, my adopted boys, when they went to the charter schools, that was my choice. I could choose whatever I want. And I just want to provide parents the biggest opportunity to choose. But here's where I think the problem is. And this is maybe where I differ a little bit from other folks. The accountability to me is what's important. I want to make sure that they're judged by the same standards that we put the public schools to be judged by. Because if you don't do that, then it's an unfair system. Then I think funding can be funny, and then we're doing the public a disservice if we're not educating the kids at the level that we want them to be. Because I think a school, like if you think of the top two school districts in Bexar County, we know Alamo Heights is one. I mean, they've got money, they're good. Do you know the second one? The second one is Somerset High School, Somerset ISD. How is Somerset, and that's in my district, 100% in my district. I've been to all my school districts. I've walked through them. I know all superintendents. Dr. Moreno, I walk in one of his campuses. It is a culture of learning, and it's just beautiful culture. I don't want to say names, but there's other school districts that, man, it's a struggle to be there. You know, it's just, so it's a, people don't like for me to say that sometimes, but it is a business. And if I had to send my child to Somerset, man, I would keep them in Somerset. I wouldn't go to any, I don't think Somerset has to worry about charter schools, ESAs, or anything, because they're doing a good job. A school district that's not doing a good job, that one might suffer a little bit. But I want to preface all of that with saying I'm a big proponent of fully funding public schools. And I think if they're fully funded and they really care about lifting grades up, they win. They have the gyms, they have the libraries, they have the infrastructure. They have everything to be successful and win. There's no reason they shouldn't win. The only reason why they might not win is if kids aren't being educated properly. Then that's a parent's choice to say, you know what, you know, I had that opportunity. And you're right, I was ignorant even when I went to the charter school. I told my wife, we walked through there, and she goes, I'm going to sign them up. I said, hold on, let's talk. You know, this is going to cost us. You know, this is a lot of money. And it was part of this public school system. I didn't know because it was so different. And like I said, we were there 2 years. I would have rather them graduate from there, but they made a compelling argument to me, and it was a family decision. Really, it was my decision at the end. And okay, boys, you know, we can do this. And we did. But there again, it's my choice as a parent. And I think the parent needs to have that choice to take their child to the best education that they feel is out there for that child. And I guarantee you, if a public school is performing and hitting everything, they're going to win. The private schools scare me if we don't put the right metrics on them or they're judged differently. That's not fair.
Well, right now, there's no new requirements for those private schools to meet the same metrics that the public school system has to. So they'll get public dollars but not have to meet those metrics.
And I think that's going to be up to the legislature to say, hey, we've got to make that happen.
So let me ask you about this other major issue that is motivating voters right now. And the question is about abortion in Texas. As you know, Texas has a really hard ban on abortion in the state. The question has come up about the exceptions that we have for saving the life of the mother or preventing harm from the mother, and how that is being enforced in Texas and whether or not the law as it is written is being implemented the way the lawmakers intended it, because it seems like Attorney General Ken Paxton is telling hospitals, he's telling doctors that he will prosecute them if they provide abortion care for women who are in crisis pregnancies. So are you thinking if you go back to the legislature to make some tweaks or adjustment, or what needs to be happened? Do you think it's working well?
No, you know, we've heard a few talks on that, and I want to take a look. I wasn't there when we first voted for it. I wasn't in that session when they did that, but I am a pro-life candidate, 100% I am. Life of the mother, that I thought, you know, as far as I'm understanding, that's already built in there. If we need to make that stronger, if there's instances where things are going bad on that track, I would like to know that, because that's a deal. Rape and incest. As a Christian man, I'm very pro-life, but man, I struggled with the rape and incest because, you know, I think if it was my daughter, I don't have any daughters, but if I had a daughter and that would have been, you know, if it would have been a rape, I think we, as a personally, I would say, no, we're going to have the baby.
But right, but even rape and incest, put that aside for now. Let's just talk about the crisis pregnancies. When women have
Her life's in danger.
Life's in care, having a miscarriage, and they need abortion care in order to deal with, they want to have children. And they want to continue to protect their reproductive life going forward. But we're seeing there's multiple cases of women who have to go to other states and they're having to wait in the waiting rooms. They're bleeding out. They're having all sorts of problems because doctors are afraid to give them the care that they need.
And I think what we need to do maybe better as a state is put that out, those instructions properly out, because for the life of the mother, there should be, it's like a no-brainer. We've got to take care of the mother's life if that's the case. If the mother's life is in danger, my understanding that the laws say is that that can be taken into account. And if it's not, how do we clarify that and fix that?
Right. The law seems to be clear, but the interpretation of it seems to be muddled by Attorney General Ken Paxton. So, I mean, I don't know how y'all are going to, you know, if you want to deal with that or you're.
Well, I think we have to deal with it. If we're having our constituents come and that's turning to be a big issue, we have to address that.
All right, so let me ask you about, so you co-sponsored a bill, HB 2127, prohibited cities from passing heat-related ordinances. So can you tell me about why you co-sponsored this bill? This is so that cities like San Antonio could not put out an ordinance requiring water breaks.
I've never heard of anybody not providing water in San Antonio. That's like when does that not? I mean, I'm a San Antonio firefighter. In all my career, I've had one. We did make a death early in the career, but it wasn't because it's not water breaks. It's just somebody overheated. But everybody has gotten water breaks and doing those kind of things. To me, some of these things I don't understand it. Because it did not pass or because we prevented that, there was no like a huge spike or increase in deaths because no
well,
water.
Well, we have seen people spike in deaths from heat-related.
Heat-related, sure, yeah. Sports and play. Yeah,
we need a mailman, you know, on the route, you know, having a fatal collapse. We've had one of the most deadliest summers in last summer. We haven't gotten the numbers yet for this summer. But yeah, people are dying.
Yeah, no doubt. But I'm saying they're not dying because nobody's giving them a break. Like, oh, you can't take a break and not have water. That one I just did not understand. I could not wrap my arms like, where is the problem that we have to pass this so that we save? So my thing back would be, so if we would have passed that, would none of these people have died, or there'd still be heat related deaths, right? We have to be careful on how we do things. You know, right now we're out block walking right now, and I'm making sure, you know, hey man, there was a couple of days that we canceled our block walking efforts. I went out there and I almost passed out. I said, that's enough, you know. So I don't see companies in San Antonio doing those things like you're not getting water breaks.
All right. Okay. So if there was evidence, then you would rethink it.
Oh yeah, no doubt. If we had some deaths, and I would even go as far as prosecuting a company that wouldn't
allow that. I just don't see that happening.
Okay. So let me ask you about, you voted in favor of the creation of a state border police, and I haven't really gotten a lot of good answers about what exactly the state border police is going to be doing. Can you tell me about that? Because you voted in favor of it.
Yeah. On that there, I looked at the border. I went to the border myself because I'm hearing the border's bad, and then I'm hearing everybody, it's exaggerated. I personally, Dave, went to the border. I got on the boat with Border Patrol, drove the river, looked at it. In fact, I got lucky. I went with a group, and I was the only elected official. The rest were reps or staffers. And so I was the only elected official there, and I went. And then I had to do an interview on the TV, so everybody left on the boats that I was supposed to be on. And I was really mad because I finished. I said, hey, man, I didn't get to go. I want to go on the river and see this stuff. And the Border Patrol said, hey, you know, we'll take you. And so I went by myself. I had a tour. And get this, man, I see a drone in the sky. And I'm all excited. I said, man, we got drones. That's good. He goes, that's not ours. I said, what do you mean it's not ours? He goes, that's cartel.
But that was in whose airspace?
That's the thing. He said it was in their airspace at the time. I didn't know. Probably Mexico's airspace. And then I said, we allow that? And he goes, we used to shoot them down. We used to bring them down. We have the technology to bring them down and take them over. He goes, but when they changed presidents and Biden came in, no longer do it if it's on their side. And he goes, even if it comes over, we'd bring it down, but we'd have so much red tape and we're in trouble. So we just leave them alone. And I said, can you operate like that? And these guys are like, first of all, they're not just sharing this. Right. They're reluctant.
And this is an observational drone. It's not weaponized.
Not weaponized. Observational drone. And here's what they do with them. They'll send 300 people across. This is exactly what the border patrol. Right. 300 people.
They're looking for gaps to put people across.
Yeah, well, they're creating gaps. So they're sending 300 people across right now, hurting, sick, some regular folks. Everybody becomes process servers. You got to have ambulance. A big deal because you got 300. The drones are in the sky. All of this is clear. Here's the people that won't be able to get processed coming across. Here's the drugs coming across, sex trafficking, child sex trafficking, women, men.
So how does the state border patrol, this is something that you passed, what does that do?
So when we looked at that, of course, there's all kinds of versions of that. I voted because I wanted everything that these people down at the border could utilize. So if a guy says, I'm going to utilize it this way, I can get these people, deputize them, train them, get them, everything that we can do to say, okay, do something, get something done, we need to do it. You know, you look at that Operation Lone Star.
Right.
The fentanyl, they could kill. I was looking at the numbers.
Fentanyl is coming through the ports of entry carried by Americans, not coming on the backs of migrants. And that's a fact. And even a lot of conservative outlets say that. But real quickly, because we're almost out of time, do you think the, you know, $12 billion Operation Lone Star, does it need more oversight? Do you want, because you're a businessman, you know, you got to look at it, you got to look at every dollar.
Yeah, you know, Operation Lone Star, I was real hesitant on it till I went to the border, and now I'm a supporter. But, man, we got to have oversight on it. And if we can get the federal, this is money that the federal government should be spending I'm big on immigration. We need a big immigration people here, but we have to have it orderly where they come in, and we need a strong border. And a lot of that is Texas taxpayer money, spending money that the federal government should be putting policies in place.
You just said you were at the Border Patrol. There was federal government there.
Well, they're there, but the policies are just horrible where people are just coming. When you have policies like that where you got a drone and they're creating gaps, and Border Patrol knows it. Right. People know it. They know how it's happening, but nothing's being done about it.
All right, so we need comprehensive reform.
Amen. Amen.
Yeah, I think everyone would agree with that, you know? So, you know, everyone wants a secure border. Everybody.
Yeah. Well, you know, I deal a lot with Tony Gonzalez, Henry Cuellar, Eddie Morales, Democrats and Republicans. These are all like-minded people that we got to get reform.
All right. It's always great talking to you, John Lujan. Incumbent, seeking re-election, Republican representative for House District 118 South Bear County. It's great to have you in here. Let's do this more often.
Man, I love it. Thank you. You're a good man. Thank you so much.
All right. Thank you. We're going to go to break. When we come back, we're going to be joined by the Democratic candidate, Christian Carranza. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. Stay with us.
This program is recorded from an earlier live broadcast.
This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. We're having a Meet the Candidates program today. We just heard from John Lujan. He is the incumbent from Texas House District 118, a Republican, and now we're meeting his Democratic challenger, Christian Carranza. She won the primary battle, and now she gets to go on to the general election. This is a seat that is seen as extremely flippable. It could be turned into a blue district, and a lot of people are hoping to do that because they want to push, challenge some of the Republican agenda items. And, and if you get a question or a comment about that, give us a call, 833-877-8255, 833-TPR-TALK, if you got a question for candidate Christian Carranza. And welcome to The Source. Great to have you.
I'm happy to be here, David.
And so tell us about yourself. How did you come to be involved in politics and become, this is your first race?
It's my very first time running for office. So I grew up in House District 118 and on the south side of San Antonio. I was raised by a single mom who worked extremely hard to take care of me and my brother. And she did that despite her having a lot of health issues and no health insurance. So for me, that meant at 16, getting my very first job at Bill Miller's, which is like the most San Antonio thing ever. But I got that job to help my family pay for bills. And then in college, my mom's health got really bad. So I did what I think any daughter would do for her mom. I left school to come home and take care of her. And I made sure that she got the health care that she needed. That's what really has inspired me to become a community organizer. And since then, I have registered over 10,000 voters here in Texas. I've enrolled families like mine into the Affordable Care Act and into Medicaid. And now at 34 years old, I'm running for office for the first time because I think that there's too much on the line this year to just stay on the sidelines. I talk to voters every single day. I've been knocking doors since January, and it's very clear that folks are looking for a fresh perspective. They're looking for leadership. They're looking for someone that at the end of the day, they know they can count on. And that's why I'm running for office. I want to give back to the community that has given me so much. And I'm working really hard to win in November.
Many listeners may have read the story. It was in the paper and covered in the media about how the Republican Party of Bexar County was making a to-do about your name. You're saying that you had a different name and then you legally changed it to Carranza. And so can you talk about that?
So Carranza is my mother's last name. I was raised by a single mom. I was raised by my mom and my grandma on the south side of San Antonio. And my mom worked, like I said, really hard and she struggled. So the name Carranza isn't just a name to me. It also represents the journey of my family. And I love my mom for all that she's done for me. And I want to honor her. And I'm so proud to carry that name with me. I changed my name from Carranza 10 years ago. And I legally changed it because I never felt a connection to my former last name. You know, I was raised by my mom. My dad left when I was very young. And so for me, it feels right to be using the name of the person that raised me. And I think that the Republican Party in Bexar County trying to threaten to file a lawsuit against me is just an obvious attempt to distract voters from John Lujan's voting record, particularly his record on vouchers. And it's also an attempt to diminish me as a Hispanic person and also as a woman candidate and all the things that come with being a Latina. So, you know, I think it was very obvious what they were trying to do. And when I talk to voters on the doors, you know, that's not what they're talking about. That's not something that resonates with them because women change their names for so many different reasons. And there are so many important issues that they do talk to me about.
Well, I want to jump on that point you just made there about women changing their names. Mm-hmm. And we're seeing with these really tough voter ID laws that we have in Texas and that have been proposed for national adoption, that they seem to be making voting very difficult for women because they're saying that your birth certificate is going to have to match your official ID. And if it doesn't, then you can't vote. And so like 30 to 40% of married women don't have the documentation that would allow them to qualify to vote under these new laws. And they're showing that a high percentage of women are having trouble with voter ID laws, particularly the ones that we have in Texas. Mm-hmm. So can you talk about how this seems to be targeted mm-hmm. towards women? And we're seeing right now in the vote in the campaign nationally that there is this huge gender divide between voting practice. Who's, I mean, a lot of women are voting for the mm-hmm. Democrats. They mm-hmm. they respond to Kamala Harris's pitch, and so it seems like is this deliberate? What's going on here?
It sounds like, you know, this underlines what the Republican Party is doing, and it shows their further disrespect for women. And when I'm on the doors, there is so much excitement and energy for women. If I win in November and I'm working really hard to get there, I'll become the first woman and Latina to represent District 118. And I think what women are looking for is someone that's going to represent their needs and their health care. And so to deliberately try to target women from the vote is an obvious attempt of voter suppression, an obvious attempt to try to keep women from voting for people who are going to protect their health care.
So let's talk about the expansion of health care, Medicaid expansion in Texas. We know that there's a lot of talk about property taxes. If they were to expand Medicaid in Texas, that property taxes would go down because property taxes are used, like in Bexar County, to support the public health, public hospital system. It seems like this is something that would make sense. It would expand health care, it would add to the quality of life, and it would save people on their property taxes. But why aren't we hearing more about that?
So Texas is one of 10 states that hasn't expanded Medicaid for no good reason. We have the biggest Medicaid gap in the whole country, and it's the single biggest thing that we can do to expand health care coverage for Texans. You know, there's a lot of reasons why Republicans don't want to do it, but none of them are good reasons. What we have to do, if we want to be really fiscally responsible, is use those federal dollars that are just sitting there so we can divert our state taxpayer dollars to other things that we really need to fund, like our schools and like our hospitals.
Okay, and are voters talking about that? Do they know about expansion of Medicaid? Is that something that's gotten down to the level?
You know, a lot of the voters I talk to fall into the Medicaid gap.
All right. So I'm going to take a caller here, but I need you to put the headphones on so you okay. can hear what they have to say. All right. And so we have Marion. Marion, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Hi. Thank you for running. And Mr. Lujan was before you, and he was saying that the voucher program, it is good. But I'm a single mom of two. And I would love to have my children, my two children, when they're in the middle school, to be in the voucher program. But I can't afford that. I can't afford it. It's a voucher. It's not a whole scholarship. I have to pay. For me, I have to have four jobs for being able to be on the voucher program. Can you explain more about what the voucher program is about and why we, as a single parents, we cannot afford this?
All right, Marion, thank you so much for calling in. We appreciate your call. Yeah, go ahead.
That's a really great question. I mean, and I want to be very clear. Vouchers are vouchers, and folks like to dress them up as education savings accounts, but they're vouchers. And vouchers are a scam that pulls taxpayer dollars from already underfunded public schools and uses that money to subsidize private school tuition here in Texas. And despite the fact that 90% of students in Texas attend a public school, Greg Abbott and John Lujan have made their top priority private schools, not public schools that the state constitution requires that they support. If you're looking at states like Arizona that have already implemented this voucher program, and you dig in a little deeper, you see that 75% of the students that have families that benefited from vouchers were students that already attended private school at the expense of public schools. So, you know, if you're looking at that and you're talking to voters like I am across the district, private school vouchers is the number one issue. And I'm talking to folks like Marion, right? They're like, oh, you know, they're trying to understand, will the voucher like help my child? Like, what does that look like? But, you know, it's a $10,000 voucher, and that money doesn't always equate to all the fees that are associated with private schools, right? So it really, at the end of the day, it's not much money, and it really just benefits people that are already attending private schools. When I'm knocking on doors, because it's a pretty big district. It's big. It's like the South Side, the Far East Side, Northeast Side. It's a very blue-collar district, very working-class district, majority Hispanic district. And so when I'm talking to folks, everyone's either a teacher, a spouse of a teacher, a school district employee. There's like some special connection to schools. And in District 118 in Harlando ISD, where I went to school, we had 4 elementary schools closed down just this past year. So when I'm talking to folks at the doors, they're understandably very frustrated because their property taxes are going up, but their neighborhood school is closing. And so they can't make sense of it, right? And so what I think what we need to do is be very real about what's happening here. Greg Abbott is using the guise of parent choice to try to pass these vouchers. Parent choice already exists. And I know that because I'm talking to folks at the doors. I'm talking to people who send their children to private schools. And what I say to them is, that's wonderful. That's a blessing that you're in a place to do that. What I don't agree with is using state taxpayer dollars, property tax dollars, to help fund private school tuition.
Right. Okay, we got to take a break here. Our phone lines are open. If you get a question for the Democratic candidate for Texas House District 118, Christian Carranza, give us a call, 833-877-8255, 833-TPR-TALK. And when we come back, I want to talk about abortion in Texas and what's going on there. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. Stay with us. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. With me in the studio, Christiane Carranza. She is the Democratic challenger for Texas House District 118. The Republican incumbent is John Lujan. We had him on the last half hour. Christiane, is here to take your calls and questions. So what issues concern you, and ask her where she is on those issues. Give us a call, 833-877-8255, 833-TPR-TALK. And now we have John on the line. And John, you're on the air.
Oh, Dave, how are y'all doing?
All right, you're on the air, John.
But I just want to comment on the voucher issue. I support the candidate's position. I'm not a resident of San Antonio. I live in North Texas, and our town's about 8,000 people, and if voucher passes, it will destroy our public schools. Our public schools are the heart of our community, so I mean, it affects us in rural Texas as well, North Texas. And I just wanted to comment, and I appreciate your position. I hope you do well, and there's a lot of us who agree with you out here in the world.
Oh, thank you.
Well, John, thank you so much for your call. I appreciate it. Well, this is why the Republican Party has had that civil war. There's a lot of rural red Republican districts, and they don't want this happening to them. That's why they didn't go with Abbott's plan. Mm-hmm. And then when they didn't vote with him, he primaried them. And that's why we saw what happened to Steve Allison in his district. Just a little bit more. So right now, then we'll get to abortion, we're seeing schools not funded fully.
Right.
School districts across the state are just struggling to get by because they were not given the full funding that they needed because of the voucher issues. So It seems like how can Abbott and others claim that they support public schools when right now they have them on a starvation diet?
I mean, and that's right. And school districts across the state are in financial crisis because of this. Abbott is trying to really push this idea that this is about school choice. And in rural areas, we know that there aren't very many choices, right? And so that's why so many rural Republicans got primaried. There is a lot of bipartisan support to not let vouchers pass, and Abbott tried to rework the math in the primary. So this election is very important because it represents our last opportunity to hold the line against private school vouchers from passing. Greg Abbott has received a lot of money from out-of-state, wealthy extremists who have very radical agendas around our schools. And that's what's happening. And so I think we have to call it out, and we have to be very real about what's happening. I'm somebody who benefited from public schools. I wouldn't be here today without the teachers, the counselors, the after-school programs, the free meal programs, summer programs, all of these things that my family took advantage of. So it's not just about taking away schools and that quality education. We're also talking about safety nets. And for a lot of working families, middle-class families, this is the last remaining safety nets for them. And that's why I work so hard, and I will always defend public education.
So when we had Representative Lujan on before, we talked about what's happening in Texas with abortion and the fact that there are women who are having crisis pregnancies. Before we had the striking down of Roe v. Wade, and before SB 8, women could get abortion care to deal with crisis pregnancies, and now they can't. And some of that messaging is not even getting to the people who are making these decisions. They don't even know what the problems are. How can they even come up with a fix? So can you talk about that?
So in Texas, we have the most extreme abortion ban in the country that doesn't allow for exceptions of rape or incest. And so women are dying. Women are being forced to carry their rapist babies, and they're being forced to flee the state to get emergency health care, and it's unacceptable. For me, this is an issue about freedom. It's an issue about reproductive freedom. Politicians should not be making these decisions for women. We need to respect and trust women to make their own healthcare decisions with their families, with their doctors, with their God. And that should be the end of story. We need to respect and trust women.
So if elected to the House, what would you do about that?
I would work to restore abortion rights in our state.
And that's going to be very difficult, given the fact that we're still going to have the governor and the lieutenant mm-hmm. governor and the attorney general that we have. I mean, if Democrats are able to gain control of the House, at least have a really strong working minority, would they be able to at least fight for fixing the law to protect the lives of mothers? I mean, Texas needs to be the state where motherhood is something, every woman should be able to have a healthy pregnancy.
That's right. You know, I think that there's a lot of common ground in the state ledge. And, you know, I'm somebody who is pragmatic and solutions oriented. When you talk about wanting to make sure that we're keeping women safe, that's something that we all want. When we talk about reducing drug prices, reducing property taxes, reducing rent, that's something that Democrats, Republicans, independents, we all want that. So there is some common ground. And I've always said that I'm willing to work with anyone if it's for the good of Bexar County, and I'm committed to that.
Another caller, I can put the headphones back on. Juliana is on the air. Juliana, go ahead.
Hi. Hello.
Hi.
I'm not in your district, but I certainly support your position. I think one of the things that needs to be clarified for folks is that the $10,000 voucher simply helps subsidize those people who can already afford private schools. But for those folks who may want to send their kids there, they have to, like the lady who earlier said, three or four jobs in order to be able to do that. We need to clearly show people how much it actually costs to send a child to a private school and what the $10,000 would really just do.
All right, Juliana, thank you for the call. So we've covered vouchers quite a bit. It seems to be something people really are responding to. But I want to ask you about border security. We do have the $12 billion Operation Lone Star. The budget that we have for Operation Lone Star is larger than some states' full budget. There does seem to be a complete lack of oversight on where the money is going, who profits from Operation Lone Star. Can you talk about what are your concerns?
I think that the situation at the border needs to be addressed in coordination with the federal government and Mexico, not against them, and certainly not with state taxpayer dollars. The bottom line is that Republicans have been in power for 30 years in Texas, and we've spent $12 billion on Operation Lone Star, and what do we have to show for it? We're taking billions of dollars from our state taxpayers. And what's happening here locally is we're taking all that money away, and then our schools are closing due to lack of funding. That's unacceptable. it doesn't make sense. And what we have to do is make sure that we're being more fiscally responsible with our state taxpayer dollars and funding the things that need funded.
Now, the caller, let's go to Bonnie. And Bonnie, you're on the air.
Thanks for taking my call. I had two comments. Mm-hmm. One was on school funding. It seems that vouchers leave all the special needs kids out in the cold. And two, in Texas, it is safer to have a first-child abortion than to give birth. And if the legislature really wants to do something, they should take care of that problem.
All right, Bonnie. So looking at maternal mortality numbers, they're going up in the state of Texas, even though the numbers have not even covered since the passage of SB 8. But they do show that Texas is one of the worst states for maternal mortality, and that when abortion was legal in Texas, it was safer to have an abortion than to go through childbirth. I think that's the point she was making. Anything you wanted to add to that?
Yeah, no, I really, at the end of the day, when I'm talking to voters, you know, even talking to voters who maybe don't identify as pro-choice, we just want to all keep women safe and healthy. And I think that's the through line here, is that we want to make sure that the bills that we pass and everything that we're doing around women's health care is keeping women safe and healthy. And that's what I'm committed to doing.
Well, do you have any concerns about the grid, the power system that we have in the state of Texas? Also, the fact that Representative Lujan, he voted in favor of making Texas a sanctuary state for oil and gas companies. And we're seeing that there was possible fraud in the big freeze out that we had, and that the oil natural gas companies deliberately held back their supply of natural gas to jack up the price. But Texas cannot investigate or prosecute that because of laws like this one. We have about a minute and a half.
No, I think it's just unacceptable that San Antonio families lost loved ones due to the freezing temperatures. You know, we had a lot of time to fix our grid, but we put it off. And what we need to do is build interconnectedness with other grids so that way this never happens again.
And there's a lot of oil money flowing into the race. We see that happening behind your opponent. Are there concerns about that?
Well, you know, my opponent is beholden to the people who bought him this seat and who got him into the seat. I am beholden to the people. I'm beholden to my community because those are the people that support me. It's really important that we have transparency in our elections. And I've always been really transparent about who supports me. The same cannot be said about my opponent.
So what are your priorities? How would you tick them off?
For me, my priorities are making sure that we are restoring abortion rights here in Texas, that we are addressing the rising cost of living, including healthcare costs, and that we're fully funding our public schools. And that includes increasing teacher pay. Teacher pay shouldn't be a bargaining chip. It should be a no-brainer. We need to be taking care of our teachers and our students to fully fund our public schools.
All right, we got to wrap this up. Thank you so much, Christian Carranza, coming into the studio today. She is the Democratic challenger for Texas House District 118. The Republican in the race is John Lujan. And this is The Source on Texas Public Radio. Thank you for listening.
This has been The Source on Texas Public Radio. The Source is hosted and produced by David Martin Davies. Kayla Padilla is our booking and engagement producer. Engineering support from Ruben Garcia, Jesse Reeves, and Steve Short. Dan Katz is TPR's Vice President of News. The Source is made possible with support from the Gladys and Ralph Lazarus Foundation.